Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Hall. Hope you're doing well. On this show, we bring you the best clips from our Red Men Plus subscriber content. These shows that you're about to listen to are available in full over on Red Men Plus, both in video and in podcast forms. If you want to go and check them out, if you head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up as a yearly club captain, if you enter the code weekly, W-E-E-K-L-Y, when you go and sign up as that yearly club captain, you'll get 20% off. So yeah, go and get yourselves a bargain. Get on over there and check out these shows in their entirety. Right then, let's crack on with our first show. It's the Biased Football Podcast. It gives us a chance, because we focus and speak about Liverpool so much on this show. Biased Football Podcast, let's have a little look around the league and around Europe and see exactly what's going on. So yeah, here is a clip from that very show this week.
Let's talk Newcastle.
Manchester is light blue.
And Tottenham first. So I was, my son's delayed birthday party, so I was at like a VR place and we were checking the scores as we come away, and it was like, oh, it's 1-0. Oh, it's 2-0. And I went to turn to one of the lads, one of his mates, who's big into footy. I went, oh, have you seen the score? It's 3-0. I went, look. And I got the app up and it was 5. I was like, oh, Christ. And then I had a thoroughly enjoyable time watching the highlights back, watched the end of the game when I got back in and stuff. It was just...
I thought Pedro Porro, bless him, might be the worst Premier League performance anyone's had. Him and Hugo Lloris. I like that Hugo Lloris got subbed off, I think, because he was injured.
Yeah, that was good.
He absolutely...
Injured, but was still capable of coming out and doing the post-match interviews.
Well, the Match of the Day commentator said he might have gone off with shock.
He's gone off with PTSD or something.
All the similarities have been electrocuted there.
He's the level that I think Ramsdale can get to.
Decent. And he's won a World Cup, hasn't he?
But exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, he's just. He's cool. Also a liability.
Extremely liability.
It was crazy. You'd have thought, like, after the first one, they might have done something about it. And I get, because sometimes you can get struck a punch with a very early goal, completely understand that. But then they kept doing the same thing over and over, and they just kept scoring, and no one did anything.
Wait, there was even around another goalkeeper in this game, wasn't there?
I was going to say, Joe Linton goes around the goalkeeper.
I was like, get in!
That's a brilliant touch by Joe Linton, that first touch, by the way.
Yeah.
It was just like, why aren't you doing anything to stop this fella? It was like the caretaker is in charge. Like the sub teacher and the classmates are just throwing rubbers at each other, and he just can't be arsed to fix it. And he's just waiting for the 3 o'clock bell now. This fella's like, and then when he did do something like 4-0 down, it was bring Damien and Sanchez on, and it was a bit like, okay.
The lad they were booing last week.
Yeah.
He got subbed on and off
in the same game. Yeah.
I love the fact that, hang on, Lloris is off, Fraser Forster's brought in. I was like, it's not really going to help you here, lads.
I think it might be.
Yeah. I mean, did you see the sixth?
Yeah, not great.
I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh, you know what? I'll go and get a shower. 20 minutes into the game at Sam. As it turned on, it was 5-0. I was like, what have I missed? I just went to get a shower.
The game.
Like, yeah. What's happened?
The whole
How have I just washed myself and Tottenham conceded 5? Like, that. There's no need for that.
It was the same goal. Like, fair play to Newcastle. Do it unreal. But like, it never felt like they had to work that hard to score.
They had one of those games like we're against United where everything went in.
Or like, it was the Arsenal 5-1 where we just kept finding space in behind them.
Yeah, it was like 4-0 after 20 minutes.
And no one did anything about it. Like, Spurs didn't think, you know what, we'll just drop deep into this space or someone try and close the ball down or do anything. It was just ball
in. Because you got Harry Kane every time they fucking kick off shouting, still 0-0, lads. Come on. Like, no, we go. No, lads, it's not, it's 5.
We go.
We've got to change something now.
I really want to score. Terrible.
I thought Isak took his goal as well. But, like, yeah. Jacob Murphy, I think it was...
Is that the one from, like, 30 yards?
Yeah.
He's got both of them. He's got the first one.
First one and the one that the bottom bins.
I get Newcastle got money. Like, loads and loads of money. And they're going to spend it. But they spent a bit, don't get me wrong. But they haven't gone like Abramovich arrives at Chelsea and blows everything up. Or like
no, Elano and fucking Rubinho at City, they've just done it like,
yeah.
Well, hang on a minute. We want to get to those players, but I think they've gone, well, let's get them players first and then we can get them players.
Like, Everton spent money. Spoke to Everton. Everton spent a lot of money and it's gone wrong. Newcastle.
Wonder how much they've spent per goal.
£42 million per goal.
But like, Newcastle, and don't get me wrong, again, they're not like skint. They brought Anthony Gordon for 50 million quid. They're not like not spending dough, I get it. But they haven't gone absolutely crazy. Like
they haven't gone and done the signing. They haven't gone and got Neymar or whatever, or done something that's put the
Rubinho.
World of football on notice, have they? Right? They've kind of done it under the radar, which is, of course, because the now money, you know, sports washing is a lot smarter these days, is that you can't afford to have that kind of. You've got to make everyone think. Yeah, exactly. You've got to make it feel like it's an organic process now, and you've got to get by
Trippier,
fans
Botman.
And all that kind of stuff. It's the Trippier sign, and I think it's so good. He's
just, winner.
Exactly. This is the point. He is a winner, and he reminds me of James Milner with more miles on the left on the clock. He's just got that experience. He's got that quality. He's got the air of assurance about him. And then they've got like a bunch of rejuvenated lads. They've got a couple of young lads in there, and they've got some other ones who, let's be honest, won't be there in two seasons' time, maybe not even one. But they're all playing right at the peak of their power. Wrong, exactly.
Getting Nick Pope for out. 15 million quid. They have spent, well, I guess they have spent money. Like, Isak's like a good chunk of change as well. But like I say, there's no like, they haven't gone and gone like 90 million, under million quid. They've done it. They've recruited well. I've always felt like I've rated Eddie Howe more than others on the, you know, we've had conversations in the show in the past. I always think he is a good manager. They've done it. If you're going to sports wash, they've done it the right way, if that makes sense. Well, I mean, yeah. Not ideal, of course.
You're right, you do probably rate Eddie Howe more than I do. My concern is, until someone's done something, I always find it difficult to really sort of get behind them. He's impressed me this season. I still wonder whether, if he gets just top four again and doesn't get out the Champions League group, is he there? Because I feel like the way we're talking about the players, where they haven't got Alaba, they haven't got Rubinho, well, you open up Champions League and you open up a whole new playbook of managers that you can go and get. Like,
he's Mark Hughes, isn't he? You know,
I think he's better than that. He might be
Mancini. In the Man City analogy, he might be Mancini, or he might be Pellegrini, maybe. But he's
looks dead.
Oh, Jesus Christ! I thought you were dropping a bombshell there. Yeah, but you know, there's a chance that he is just. Well, we'll see. Because again, goes back to this point of like capitalising on things. Arsenal aren't ready to be title challengers, in my opinion. I don't think Newcastle are really ready to be a Champions League team. But somebody's fit and fresh and been able to kind of steal a march on the other ones.
I think a good coach as well. When it's all well and good going and buying your way in top four, but like, the players they already have.
He's made them better.
He's coached, like, Joe Linton looked miles better.
But that's because look at who he's coaching. And I agree, again, look, this is like, I'm criticising a future Eddie Howe here, who doesn't exist yet. He's coaching players that he should be capable of coaching. He's coached Premier League before. He's had decent players, you know, at Bournemouth and whatever.
They've had some good managers, some of them players, though, so you're all right. He's made players better. That's a sign of a good coach.
But Shah looks night and day compared to what I thought he was a liability for a while for them, and he looks really, really good. What they do, they're quite simple in what they want to try and do. They keep things very, very basic because they are so solid at the back. They know they've got, if we just do the very, and it's a lot of it was just like kick ball and behind.
Yeah.
It's fucking rocket science. Like, it was, and it's granted, to go back to the point, like, Spurs completely capitulated. I think the coach said we weren't prepared. Well,
it's your job, mate.
Yeah, well, literally the one thing you're meant to do, fella. In hindsight, right, sacking a manager and keeping his assistant as a caretaker is madness, isn't it?
And having Ryan Mason still around.
No, but why not? I think it'd be better just put him in charge because he might do something different.
Well,
though,
in hindsight, go back and keep Jose Mourinho in charge for the League Cup final and maybe win that League Cup final and totally change the complexion of the entire football club moving forward. But
they've sacked Conte, kept a fella who agreed with Conte's plans and only knows what Conte did.
Well, we're talking about this, like, good managers getting, you know, being able to galvanise squads, and the good managers are worth points because they can engineer wins, and they don't have a good manager and they've got a demotivated squad. It's wild. Just a quick look at it. Newcastle had 8 shots on target in that game and scored.
What do you think of Kane?
That is almost exactly what we did to the United. I think we had 8 shots and scored 7 goals or something. Mad. 8 shots on target, maybe.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of talk about Harry Kane's future, wasn't there, after this? He's going into a final year. I think Jamie Carragher made the point, I think it was on Twitter, I think he wrote, like, unless he goes to Man United and he went, I don't know if they sell to them. I think Harry Kane will want to keep. He'll want to win the Golden Boot. He takes years record.
Yeah.
In the Premier League, so where the fuck's he going to go? He might end up staying at Tottenham, and I think if he does that, that is the worst decision of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, you'd rather be the league's top scorer and win fuck all than go and win a title or go and win medals somewhere else.
I got fumed at the other day when I said he wasn't a winner. And yous were all like, no, he is.
I think he's a fucking loser. Like he's the biggest loser in the country. He's a natural born loser.
Oh, well, we had this convo the other day. I think it's unfair to suggest
that fucking Harry Kane is a fucking loser based on him.
Who said
for a loser?
I just said he wasn't a winner.
No, he's a loser. He's a loser because he's continued.
I don't know what this means.
Keep signing for new contracts. That's the football club.
That's the
problem. Go away. You know, go and sign. Go and force you move somewhere else.
And would you? He needs to go now. But I see Carragher's point. If Levy won't sell him to United. And if he stays at Tottenham just to get that Shearer record.
Newcastle United.
Going back.
Ooh! Hello.
Real Madrid need a striker if they don't re-sign Benzema.
He wants the Premier League, or go to PSG, or go somewhere and win titles and win trophies.
Go to Man City.
And Newcastle would be a good place for him, you know.
Yeah.
It would. It might be.
Stand on the steps. Himself to get all the crowd out there.
And then if he beats Shearer's record at Newcastle as well.
I just think if he stays at Tottenham just to get that record, that reflects so poorly.
But it goes
him.
Like it's like him in the game himself gets his goal. He's done his job. That's why we laugh so hard when Ronaldo's goal got disallowed when we beat United at Old Trafford, because that was his get out of jail. Well, I'm Cristiano Ronaldo. I've done my job, but everyone else has failed in their jobs. That's Kane in a nutshell. He's just like, I score 30 goals a season, and everyone else needs to be the one who carries weight. And in his head, that's an acceptable way to live.
Where I disagree with everybody here is that, like, it could just be that he wants to win a fucking trophy at Tottenham.
I don't think he does.
Last year, Chris?
No.
He tried to
get to City. But he decided to stay.
No, he never. Daniel Levy decided to stay. He offered him a new contract and he said no.
But if he signs another contract now, you're assuming it's because he wants the Golden Boot thing. Because of something somebody says. And it could, all I'm saying is, it could be Steven Gerrard, Chelsea going, listen, one trophy with fucking Liverpool means more to me than eight with fucking Chelsea.
So that's
where I get annoyed, because you don't know.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's a fair point. I do understand.
I just don't think he's going to win anything.
Bearing in mind, I think he should know that.
I understand that, but that's not
do
what
I'm
saying.
I've never got the sense that Harry Kane loves Tottenham.
No.
I don't know. I'm a Spurs fan, so...
He's been there a long time. He could fall in love with the fucking club.
Yeah, he could do, but again, the Gerrard one's a good one, because Gerrard tried to engineer a move and change his mind. But I don't think Harry Kane didn't change his mind last summer. Daniel Levy wouldn't let him go. Right then, next up, yes, it's our final word show. Liverpool went to West Ham and Liverpool went and beat West Ham down at the London Stadium. It was an absolute belter of a game. And yeah, here is the final word show reviewing that very victory.
I mean, I went into the game with not little faith, but just apprehensive, like I have been in all the games. I mean, I know, like I said, it has been five games without a loss before the game, but I don't know. It's just been unpredictable. And then when we conceded that first goal, my nerves went then, but theirs never, which was good to see, because this season, once we've conceded first, it's just been the most draining thing to watch. But first half, my nerves were gone, but second half, That's a really good point you make,
because I think Jamie would agree, during the course of the season when we haven't played very well in the face of adversity, so we go a goal down and you get round shoulders, and the people that you want to stand up and be counted and be leaders have kind of gone hiding a little bit, and self-confidence, a lack of self-confidence rather, will do that to you. And even the best players, the ones that play every possible game in the season and are on the precipice of football and immortality, those guys still are human, Jamie, and they still suffer from nerves and they still suffer from football. It's particularly a confidence game, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we've developed, going back to the Arsenal game now, a good trait of obviously Arsenal, we stank the place out for the first 20 minutes, ended up coming back, probably should have won the game. We've conceded against Leeds, that, you know, that mistake from Konate. Went up and down the other end, scored straight away. I know Leeds weren't very good, but, you know, we didn't feel sorry for ourselves, which we have done for a lot of other games in the season. When even like Salah missed a penalty against Arsenal. You know, he misses a penalty against Bournemouth and we lose the game. I think there's definitely been a bit of a mentality shift. Forest, we get pegged back twice and we don't go, oh God, it's another one of them. We win the game. And yesterday we concede first. Bit of maybe questions over, you know, someone, I think someone could have tugged somebody down or, you know, at least tried to stop that developing on the left-hand side. But it's an emphatic finish. And then we don't go, oh, here we go. These are playing well. You know, the crowd's up. They're doing well in Europe. But not like we just, you know, within 5 minutes or so, go down the other end and score. Because I thought we'd been playing pretty well until we conceded the goal.
It feels like we're getting that belief back, you know, once we go down, that we can actually come back and win the game or get a draw, get something out of it. Because you just haven't seen that at all this season. It just hasn't felt like we were going to claw back at all. But you could see the belief in the players as well. They don't look as deflated as they have in the past when they've went behind. They look like they actually had some belief there. And I mean, I don't know if it's a big result. I mean, none of us know about top four. None of us know what's going to happen. I think there's 15 points left to pay for, 18 maybe, depending on yesterday. But I don't know, it just looked like they had the belief back and that'll probably set us forward going into next season. Like Klopp said himself, like, next season sort of starts now when you go into mentality and stuff like that. So hopefully it gives them a confidence boost if it doesn't get us to top four. But if we do, then it looks like a really important result.
It does. And I think, dare I say it, mentality monsters is a phrase that's been thrown around this Liverpool side for years. This is resilience. It's not mentality monsters yet. Yeah, it's on the road to mentality monsters, I think is fair to say. So it's really good to see some resilience. I think you're right, 5 or 6 minutes that we were behind for before we got the equaliser. We're really, really pushing to try and get to the sort of the holy grail, which is really, really unlikely given the opposition we're up against. But we'll never let it go until it's mathematically impossible. And all you can do is keep winning games. And if by hook or by crook, Everton manage a result against Newcastle tonight, it makes life interesting.
What are you rooting for? Do you want Newcastle to win or do you want Everton to win?
It's a difficult one. I always put Liverpool's quests and things we're trying to do first. So in that regard, I would be okay if Liverpool, if Everton were to win. I won't lie, because of the way that things have gone between the two clubs, if Everton go down, I'm not really bothered. I have no quest for them I want Everton to stay up because it's two derbies every year. I don't particularly enjoy the relationship between the clubs at the moment.
I'm not like a Merseyside football, like, oh, good for the city sort of.
I'd like to see that change, if I'm being honest. I'd like to see it go back to how it was in the sort of 80s and 90s when we went to two FA Cup finals and they travelled down together, and there's the famous video of the Everton fans pulling the Liverpool fan through the toilet window because he didn't have a ticket. Those days are gone. I'd like to see that come back to some degree. I doubt it will. But if the point being, if Newcastle don't get anything at Everton, a little bit of self-doubt, not used to being in this position, not used to working towards these things. We're seeing it with Arsenal now, taking 3 points from the last 12.
Yeah.
You don't win league titles doing that. And equally, if we can see someone unseat Newcastle's confidence, that said off the back of a 6-1 win at home to Tottenham is quite a claim, then potentially that they could suffer the same fate. We need to be there to capitalise. Remember when we were running the gap down between City last season and we were 14 points behind them with the game in hand, and every time we came in here we were saying, win your games, win your games, win your games, and hope upon all hope that something happens to City and they have a wobble. There was a stage when we were a point clear of them. They played on the same day and went back 2 points in front of us. But if Manchester City can have a wobble, they're in autopilot right now. They know how to do this, and so do we. So really interesting if we can push this across the line. It's not over, it's not finished, but it's hard. It's really, really hard thing to do. And you said before, Abby, at the start of the show, we finished the season well and we end up fifth. There's a little bit of something to build on because we finished the season well. If we finish the season with, let's say, 8 wins and a draw in the last 9 games, for instance, and we get to that stage, and that catapults us to fifth, and we're banging on the door of fourth. What it says to me is, you didn't really need to be very good for very long to get into the top four, but we've been off it for such a long period through the season, we never got close to asking those questions.
Yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree. But yeah, and you build on that next season, do you know what I mean? Especially if we finish fifth. I'm the type of person who wants us to finish in a European place. I don't get this vibe that's going on at the minute where people go, I don't want it, just focus on the league. I'll take the away days. Give me a ticket if you don't want to go to the Europa Games. You know what I mean? I want that. I want more games. Give the young kids a chance to get a run out as well if we're not in the Champions League. But it's not over till it's over. So I'm not saying it as if we are in the Europa League, and I'm not saying it as if we're not getting any European football. But it's all on the table at the minute. But I really want Everton to go down this season. So I'm going to sit there tonight. And either way, what happens, I'll be sound. Maybe a draw. A draw might do. I think a draw puts Everton to 18th, I think. Still keeps them in the bottom three. So that'll probably suit me, I think.
What are you up on now?
For Everton? I don't mind either way. I think it'd be... I've always thought that they'll do it. But then there was a point last year where I went, no, these are going down, aren't they?
And well.
They might... It could be catastrophic for them going down. I think going back to us, some of the Man United and Newcastle players might just be looking over the shoulder a bit here now because they know we can put runs together. We haven't looked like doing it all year, which is why a lot of people have gone out. Top four is definitely gone. United have got some tricky... I'm trying to remember who they've got now. Spurs... Is it ridiculous in thinking Spurs could not lose against United tonight? You know, like and Villa are in there. United are playing Brighton, I think, at some point. So there's games where and what always happens at this point in the season is like Liverpool lose to Southampton on the last day. There's always some stupid result, isn't there? It never goes how you think, but there are enough decent clashes between these top four rivals for them to drop points. So we just have to keep winning the games and see where we are.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right then, nice one to Steve, to Jamie and to Abby for that one. Yeah, it's always nice to talk about the Reds winning football games. Hasn't been too often, away from home especially. So that was a really, really good one. Right then, next up, it's Journo Inside Time. It was me alongside goals, Neil Jones, and we had a big old chat about more of the midfielders being linked to Liverpool this summer, of which there are plenty. Speaking of moves, let's talk about Kiefer and Thuram. So we filmed a little bit earlier last week, didn't we? So this came out just after me and Neil had spoken on last week's show from Miguel Delaney, the chief football writer of The Independent. Says, Liverpool identify legend's son as a solution to their midfield problem. Kiefer and Thuram is seen by Jürgen Klopp as the perfect answer to the issue after Liverpool missed out on Jude Bellingham. Goes on to say, Liverpool are looking at OGC Mises Kiefer and Thuram as an option for their midfield this summer. Jürgen Klopp is seeking to overhaul the state of the team and is seeking at least two players having missed out on Borussia Dortmund's Jude Bellingham. Goes on to say Liverpool wants someone with energy and running, the ability to carry out the Germans' demands tactically, and assessment to Thuram that he fits that bill after this considerable development in the French league. It's another name to add to the mix. There's been plenty of them. We spoke about plenty of them here on this show. We've spoken before about maybe it might just be a list because Liverpool aren't going to get to a situation where, like last year with Tchouaméni, it was him or nobody. They're not really in the comfortable position of that they need to get bodies in. Does it feel like that might be this way? He does sit somewhere on a list of potential options.
Yeah, I think so. I think I think everyone's on the list almost, isn't he? Everyone under the age of 27 who plays in midfield at a decent level is a potential player for Liverpool. I mean, there's other. I mean, we haven't. I know he's not on the agenda here, but there was a story on the weekend about Calvin Phillips, wasn't there?
You know, I didn't put that on the agenda.
Being in there, you know, there's possibilities everywhere. My argument, I think Liverpool would want a bit more of a sure thing, and I think Kefren Turam is clearly a player of huge potential, isn't he? You know, he's playing on a good side in the French league. You know, playing. Have the pride of playing alongside Ross Barkley and Aaron Ramsey and Nicolas Pepe and the likes. Play for France, yeah. He's obviously got huge potential. It's whether they believe that potential is nailed on. And they did with Tchouaméni, they obviously did with Bellingham, despite not being able to get them. Or is he someone who just, they know exactly what they'll get from him if they put him straight into this Liverpool team? I think there's enough doubt there, isn't there, obviously, you know, not to go down the sort of Sokosati route of player doesn't play in England, so he can't handle the Premier League. Plenty of players can come in and immediately handle it. But that would be the question. Can he go straight into this team, or does he become a player that, you know, maybe, huge potential, but maybe not, or maybe he does. But I would definitely, the price, the age, the profile, the type of player he is, the potential that he's got makes him someone who's definitely on a list, you know, that Liverpool would be looking at. There's a lot of players, a lot, like, you wouldn't believe how many players are, you know, you hear banded about around Liverpool. We talk about a lot of them on this show. Look, there's some underneath, obviously. Now there's another one we're going to talk about in a sec. I don't think you'd rule any of them out, really, beyond maybe anyone who's over 28 or anyone who's going to cost £150 million.
So anyone not named Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
At this point in time.
Yeah. You know, I think Turam's in a maybe category. I think that would be the way. There's a lot in that maybe category, and it depends again. You know, there's stories. You know, go back to another player, but Mason Mount. The stories this week that Chelsea are going to have face to face talks with him, or have held face to face talks. They're going to try and make a play to keep him. You know, that has a knock on effect, doesn't it? If they're successful, if they're not successful, there's a chance Liverpool get the deal done. If they are successful, of course, that's off the table. So you move down the list, don't you? And okay, who was underneath there? Okay, you know. Others, Matheus Nunes was high on the list early in the season, or was pretty much, you know, a big target. That seems to have moved a little bit away. Who was underneath that name? You know, there's a lot of moving parts. I think obviously we'll see things start to solidify and you know, become a bit more clear. I think in the next month, you know, I think they're going to get into a position, aren't they, where they want to be in. They want to be ready to move. I think Jürgen confirmed that the return date for pre-season, the 8th of July, I think they want to have people through the door by then. They don't want to be in a position where it's like, right, okay, if we don't get him, who are we going to get? I think they want to be in a position where they know what they're getting. So I think May, we'll see a lot of things start to become a little bit more clear. Whether it'll involve Mr. Thuram, I don't know. Maybe he can bring his brother as well. Yeah, I think his brother's going to have a move in the summer. Yeah, Marcus?
If you can't get guy out of a,
yeah,
out of
I'd have million. There was times this season when I would have had his dad.
he's still probably got a game for us yet. Yeah. Let's move it on then, because on the João Paulinho stuff, he's the next name I want to speak to. Miguel Delaney also named him in his story. Dom King wrote something similar saying he's a name on a list. I was looking before, obviously, at when we went to the Turam thing. One thing he can do, he can play as like that number six type role, but he can also play as an eight. Paulinho again, Fulham. He's been predominantly more of the holder midfielder. A lot of the links that Liverpool have been, you know, you're talking your Mount and your Gravenberches and your McAllisters and your Bellingham. It's been ahead of what you'd call number sixes. With Fabinho's form being what it was, it felt like maybe them getting a six was like almost a necessity. But there weren't too many names banded about. But now we're starting to hear a couple of them. Do you think they are going to play sign somebody who can maybe take his place and he becomes more of an option? Obviously, Stefan Pacetic is also in this mix. But
Trent's
playing, effectively doing the same job now. I don't know. There's two more names now on today's show who are more like, who can be more your holding players, which is a bit of a move away from the other conversations we've had in recent weeks.
Yeah, I think it depends on what they feel of Fabinho's decline this season, really. Is it a permanent one? Is it a manageable one? You know, a consequence of other things, systems and injuries, and, you know, fatigue, whatever. I think if you were to sign João Palhinha, you're putting Fabinho on the chopping block, aren't you? You know, you're putting him in a position where it's like, okay, it's easy to... Let's say Curtis Jones. If Liverpool signed Mason Mount, you say, okay, that's someone who plays sort of similar to you, but, you know, you could play with him. You could both play in the team. You could alternate. I think if you're signing Palhinha, you're saying to Fabinho...
In a bit.
Well, yeah, or like, you know, if you're not on it, there's your place gone. You know, it's that... He looks a good player. I like him a lot. I like both of the lads who play in midfield for Fulham. I know he's not a particularly, I don't think Liverpool are going to sign him. But Harrison Reed, I've seen him play a few times this season. Thought, wow, what a good season he's had. And him alongside and Palhinha's likewise. I think Fulham have been a really good side this season and play lovely football. Palhinha really ticks a fair few boxes, doesn't he? If you think of the age, he's got pretty good experience. He's not a kid, is he? He's you know, mid-20s. He's got the Portuguese sort of background, a good competitive element to it. He's got a bit of bite in his game, hasn't he? You know, he gets a lot of bookings, wins a lot of tackles, that kind of thing. Potentially a player who you could see moving up the league after a year at a club like Fulham. Having a year to acclimatise and doing well in the meantime. But that would be my question is, you know, who's your, or where's your mind at with Fabinho? If you're Liverpool, are you in the position of, now we're in trouble, he's under pressure, potentially even would he leave the club? You've got Jordan Henderson there. I think Jordan's looking, he's struggling. But would he be revitalised by being moved into that sixth position? Possibly, as you say, you've got Bajcetic, who is a long-term option in there, played well this season, obviously, but this is an 18-year-old kid we're talking about, so we'll put a pin in that one for a bit. And then you've got Trent moving into that position where I don't think it's any sort of coincidence that probably Fabinho, I'm saying Fabinho's looking a bit better. Is it because he's just got someone right next to him to give the ball to, and you know, he just has to worry about sort of where he is off the ball, possibly. But if that's going to continue, then okay, that might be fine, mightn't it? So there's a few considerations there for that. I probably wouldn't have expected Liverpool to go and buy an out and out Fabinho replacement. I think ideally it'll be someone who's happy further forward, but maybe if you change the system or you play a different way, whether that's with Henderson in there or whether it's with Trent in there or whether it's with, you know, 4-2-3-1 or whatever, can sort of do a little bit of everything in there.
Is that where, like, and then you go back to Taran with that, and then maybe Ryan Gravenberch.
Maybe that
is the thing. And it's almost replacing Jordan Henderson, someone who can play as an eight, but if you need to be your deputy to Fabinho as number six,
yeah,
that does make a bit.
I think, yeah, and also someone who's got the legs to do the, ugly way. I mean, Klopp's made a big thing in recent weeks, hasn't he? You've heard him say it, the ticket into the team is what you do off the ball. That's why Curtis Jones is playing, obviously.
Why Jota's ahead of Nunes.
It's why Nunes isn't playing. You know, never mind who plays in his place. It's definitely why Jota's playing. You know, it's why Jordan Henderson's still on the side, even though he's struggling, because Jürgen believes that they'll do the side-to-side work in midfield, they'll do the space filling, they'll do the second balls, they'll you know, be part of the press. It needs to be someone like that, doesn't it? It needs to be someone like who's got energy in it. You know, there's players, and I might look stupid on this, but there's players I've seen linked with Liverpool. Ruben Neves might be a good example of that, where I think, I'm not sure about that. I think that changes a lot of what Liverpool do if they've got a Ruben Neves in there. Maybe a little bit Tielemans as well, when you see that. You think, that doesn't sort of... Maybe I'm just missing a lot. It wouldn't be the first time, but... It doesn't tally with sort of what the manager's saying. The manager's saying, I want us to get back to this way of playing. So when you see Mason Mount linked, even Conor Gallagher to a degree, you sort of say, yeah, okay, I see what he's getting at. He just wants more legs and a bit more quality in there. I think Palhinha, you know, Palhinha, Thuram, different types of players, obviously, different profiles, but they definitely look like they're good enough to play for a bigger club and a better club. Better club, a terrible phrase to use. But a bigger club and a more ambitious club, or a club fighting for, higher up the table. So we'll see what comes of it. But there's a lot of names. Listen, we'll be on next week. There'll be another name. There'll be another face next to mine on that boxing poster that we have at the start.
I hope so. That's the money ticket. We did say first night last week that I might be the star, but even I'm starting to concede that might not be the case. Now, before we wrap up on the midfield thing then, I thought it was a really good point you made before, but, you know, being ready to play, not only ready to come in, but ready to play, you know, it wouldn't be the, you know, McAllister, Mount, Palhinha, maybe that's the mould as well, where it's like you're not worrying about them adapting to the Premier League, you've seen it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there might still be some doubts. I think Sam's a great player, I think he'd have no problem fitting in. Gravenberch, I don't know, because he hasn't played for a season, but... I mean, if Jürgen's looking, you know, your bankers, you've got to pay a bit more for Premier League players. You know, you can say those, you can throw that into the mix as well. Like, I always thought this was Alex Ferguson was really, really good sometimes. He used to buy lads who were boss in the Premier League, and then and more often than not, he'd come in and be just as good. Is there a chance where Liverpool go and get three midfielders? There's someone on all three of them have been signed from teams in England. It wouldn't be the biggest shock for me.
No, it wouldn't amaze me, especially with the homegrown element as to consider. I do think that there will be at least one player that would add to that quota. If you look at the way the Premier League's developed as well, it's become so strong, hasn't it, in terms of, you know, the level of player, really, and the level of tactical sort of sophistication.
Every team's got one, you think, wow, he's...
You look, I mean, I know that not every team in the Premier League is excellent. Obviously, there's a few poor ones, but there's a lot of good players within those teams. You go, do you know what? He's a really good player, and they're all pretty much set up, you know, quite well, aren't they? You know, they all like to play, but there's a lot who are good disruptors as well. And I think that maybe does factor into this, that, you know, it's maybe a certain demand is required to play in the Premier League, and having that under your belt already proven is a big tick in a box. You know, of course, the cross in the box is the money side of it, and I saw it, you know, another player we can throw into this, but Romeo Lavia was linked with Liverpool, I think, wasn't he, from Southampton? And, you know, you think about him last summer, never played, I don't think he'd ever played a professional game even, and by the end of the summer it was talked that, oh God, Chelsea were going to try and sign him, you know, get him out of Southampton before he'd even sort of got his feet under him. To have that knowledge that someone can have a season, even if it's a difficult season, even if it's a season where their team struggled, to have that knowledge that, you know what, when you put them in the Premier League against De Bruyne or Bernardo Silva or Odegaard or whoever, Bruno Fernandes, they can handle it, they can mix it. It's a big plus. So yeah, I wouldn't be amazed at all if Liverpool sort of, I wouldn't say they narrowed the search into that department of, oh, it's got to be Premier League proven, but I think I wouldn't be amazed at all if that was a sort of, you know, a decisive factor in some of the decisions that they make, where they go, do you know what? We've got that option there. We've got that option. The money's where it is, but we know what we're getting from whoever it is, you know, that he's ready to play in the Premier League week in and week out. It can only be a plus.
Thanks once again to Neil. He really is the man. Right then, finally this week then, we've got the deep dive. Yeah, it's Chris and Josh, as it always is. The lads, honestly, their ability to spot patterns and tactics and the stats and all that stuff, it blows my mind. It really, really does. They are far cleverer than I ever be. So I watch the deep dive each and every week to try and get myself a little bit smarter. We're going to give you a chance right now to listen, and hopefully we can teach you a thing or two as well.
Whenever I've watched them, right, and this is going to sound ridiculous, so I'm sorry in advance.
Bracing myself for this.
He reminds me of if you took Patrick Vieira,
okay,
right, and you stuck him in Paolo Wanchope's body, right? That's the type of player I think he is. Like, because he's so physical, he's so strong, but he's rangy, isn't he? Yeah. But he's a great dribbler, and that's what when Patrick Vieira went from that. So when he went to City, and then they were just like, just run through the field, lad. But if you imagine Paolo Wanchope trying to do it, because he just moves a bit different, like, that's how I imagine him, and I think he'd be fun to watch, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I was with you then, to be honest, up until Vieira, but then the Wanchope thing threw me off massively. I don't know if it's because I never actually seen him play that much.
No. He's just a big rangy fucker.
He's a striker though, isn't
he? Yeah, he was a striker, but it was his body shape.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's a bit like if you put Vieira in Matip's body and asked him to just run through the middle of the park.
Yeah, okay.
I suppose it's a similar thing to that, like just a weird body.
Yeah.
But just dead good at running.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on his body there. He is 6'3", which is a nice thing in terms of Liverpool's midfield, at least, because Klopp seems to want some form of physical presence. If you look at Bellingham and Alan Tchouameni that we tried to sign last summer, both of those lads are over 6 foot. As I said, Gravenberch is 6'3". And as you touched on there, he is quite a ball carrier. I assume you're saying that because he likes to carry the ball.
Mate, he's a brilliant dribbler through the middle of the park. And that's what I mean, is that, like, not Paulo Wanchope's skill set, just his body. Everything that Patrick Vieira had as a footballer in Paulo Wanchope's body.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, we can visualise that in a way. Not the Wanchope stuff, but the numbers. so it's a bit difficult because he's playing for Bayern at the minute. He's not playing for Bayern at the minute. So we've had to go back a season to capture this.
Yeah.
So this is the Eredivisie, for those who are watching now. This is his final season at Ajax last season, and I've just picked two metrics that kind of highlight ball carrying and being able to carry the ball over long distances and stuff. So that's progressive carries on a per 90 basis, and successful dribbles per 90. And what you're seeing there is every player in the division who's played at least 1,000 minutes. And as you can see, Gravenberch is kind of towards the outliers, really, isn't he? I mean, yeah. You've got a few players who look familiar there, I'm sure, but most of those players who he's with there are forwards or fullbacks. I think Philip Max is a fullback. Anthony is obviously a
Philip Max. We were linked with him as a right back, wasn't he? We were linked with him a few years back.
Yeah, I think he originally played in the Bundesliga, but I'm not. He must be in the Eredivisie now or something like that. But
I can't say I followed his career trajectory too well.
Yeah, well, Ritso Doan is a forward. Anthony is currently at Man United. Yeah. Bruma,
wasting space there though.
Yeah. Bruma is a forward,
but he has less successful dribbles, hasn't he? Last season.
No, he has more.
Well, sorry, more.
That kind of captures what we're on about, really, doesn't it? I mean, Anthony, so far has shown himself to be a bit of a weird player at United, but he's definitely tricky. Definitely likes to dribble.
Well, he used to dribble forwards, and now he dribbles in a circle.
Yeah,
he's got it all wrong.
Yeah, that Ali Reza Jahan bash there. I've just done so
what?
Much. Yeah.
Is that how you say that? You just went with it. Yeah. Are you sure you just didn't make that up?
No, I know that's how you say it because you played for Brighton then.
Ali Reza Jahan bash.
Yeah. Iranian international he is. He's a forward.
Ali Reza Jahan bash.
Luis Sinisterre.
Like it?
Luis Sinisterre on the back of this season moved to Leeds. Mm-hmm. I think he scored last night, maybe, did he?
Don't know.
And obviously Cody Gakpo. Yeah. Is probably the name everyone recognises there. This is his season at PSV. We know, based on what we've seen already, that Gakpo is a keen carrier of the ball, and Gravenberch is kind of right up there with him, basically.
And was he playing as a left-sided eight for Ajax?
Yeah, he was playing as a left-sided eight, and he originally kind of emerged as a player who would help with the build-up, come a little bit deeper and stuff. And towards the end of his time at Ajax, he moved towards the final third, a bit like what Jones has done this season in terms of moving a little bit higher up. And just last week, just so I could get a bit of a better gauge on him, I sent a little DM to a lad who works as a video scout in the Eredivisie, who I've spoke to a few times and things like that. So I just kind of asked him, like, what does he think, basically? So we just said that Ajax, he played two roles in the 4-3-3 as a left-sided centre mid, deeper to get on the ball originally, and then later he was pushed between the lines. He's ridiculous on the ball for his age, but also a lot to learn, especially in moments of transition going both ways. I asked him if he's a passenger on the defensive side of the game, because obviously Liverpool need to get better with that. Klopp's talking about counter-press and being a ticket into the team and all this. He said he contributed well at Eredivisie level and in the Champions League. He's not a passenger, but he's also not super active, is the way he described him. So, and I did look at his defensive numbers as well.
So we'll have a look at them now, then, the ball carrying midfielders.
Yeah, well, in terms of his defensive numbers, he posted 2.7 tackles and interceptions per 90 in this season that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. That is about as much this season as a Joe Willock, Coutinho, Bruno Fernandes, Michael Olise.
Passengers.
Not, kind of, yeah. But it's more than Jordan Henderson, would you believe?
No.
Yeah, and Harvey Elliott. So
I kind of would. Do you know what? I kind of would believe it about Henderson with the Wolves.
People think Henderson's a master ball winner, right?
He's not been this season, mate.
He's not. He's a presser. I'll give you that. Covers ground a lot. In terms of regaining the ball for you, he really doesn't do it as much as people think. And you can kind of debunk that with the numbers. And if we go back to the visualisation that I've just shown, obviously he's grouped there with forwards, doesn't look as special. So if we look at it again with those forwards and fullbacks and centre-backs removed, that is how he looks compared to centre-mids, midfielders on in the Eredivisie last season.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, he's clearly an outlier there when it comes to like carrying the ball and dribbling with the ball. But this is where the risk thing comes in because, I mean, do you know any of them?
Well, no, but I'd like to say that I misread Dirk Proper as Dick Proper and I thought that was really funny. But I don't know any of those players. The risk obviously can come from that, but it can also come from the fact that he didn't break into Bayern Munich sides and you don't know what's happened over the last sort of few months as well. So
yeah.
I suppose this is where Liverpool's sort of much heralded research on a player comes in, doesn't it? Because you know, you don't want to get someone who's not really fitting in the squad or who's spitting his dummy out because he's not getting games, because he might come into Liverpool and, you know, Klopp over the years has been well known for sitting players until they've learned the system. Is that something he'd want to do after basically taking a year out from first team football week in, week out with just the one start so far this season? So is that a risk? Is it a risk because these stats are based on the Eredivisie? You know, we know that there is a formula that football clubs use to take the metrics from the Dutch league and apply them into the Premier League. There's like a formula, isn't there? Like a 1 point, divide by 1 point something or something. And you can, and each league will have one of those sort of...
strength ratings.
Yeah, like a strength rating. So it brings them down. So it's like, you're doing this in the Dutch league. Well, we reckon it's, let's say, 20%. So we divide by 1.2 and that's what we're going to get out of you. And each league, I know Liverpool have them and a lot of the big clubs have these sort of strength indicators. Is it going to translate as well to the Premier League as a risk? And I think that's what you're sort of alluding to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we took the chance on Cody Gakpo. Obviously, he's come from PSV. He's come from Holland. And but to be fair to him, in Holland he was basically ripping it up. You know, he was on like, I think around the time of the World Cup, he was on like double figures for goals and assists in that league, in like 22 starts or something like that. So
in my head, was it 18 and 11 or something ridiculous like that?
I thought it was 12 and 9.
12 and 9, might be. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of mixing up with Diaz or something.
But regardless of what it was, Gakpo was shown as like a very obvious outlier in terms of his numbers, like. 12 and 9, yeah.
And the
previous season it was 12 and 12. So he's got 12 and 9 this season for PSV in half the games, really, which is why we took a chance on him. I don't think Gravenberg is as obvious as a special standout like that. But I suppose in comparison to certain midfielders with certain metrics like the ones we've shown here, he does stand out as a specific kind of ball carrier, a bit like Jones, a bit like who's like a ball carrier like that? Kovacic, does he?
Well, one of the things that I sort of wanted to relate it to was Liverpool now. Because if you were telling me Liverpool were playing a 4-3-3 and we were taking a risk on Gravenberg, I go, okay, sounds, I like that. I don't think I'm as comfortable with him being this position here, in that sort of Kurt Jones position at the moment. And the reason why I'm probably not as comfortable is that he strikes me as a great dribbler over distance. Like, he chews up the ground really fast with that long stride of his, being 6'3". And I just wonder whether you want someone a bit more technical, a bit more in the David Silva sort of mould of a player to play this, and whether he'd be more of a that guy using the grass in front of him to get into a stride, and that's how he beats players. They're sort of flat-footed. He just moves it, runs past them. Good dribbler as well, like, don't get me wrong. But I just don't see him as quite technical enough from what I've seen of him anyway.
Cheers to Chris and cheers to Josh for that one. Yeah, that is the end of this week's show. Hope you've enjoyed it. Like I say, if you want to go and check out those shows in their entirety, head on over to redmenplus.com. Sign up as a yearly club captain. If you use the code weekly on the payment screen, you'll get it for a discount. You'll get it for 20% off. However, that code does expire on April 30th. April 30th. So if you're listening to this before then, you haven't got much time. So don't delay. Get yourselves over there. Go and check it all out. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Red Men Weekly. See you there.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.